Welcome to the podcast that helps you build wealth and thrive in a world of out-of-control central banks and big governments. This is the Rebel Capitalist Show.
Hello, fellow Rebel Capitalists. Hope you're well. Let's dive into your questions. I'm super pumped to get going here. Some housekeeping. I'm selling one of my apartments in Medellin. And people ask me, why, George? Why are you doing that? Is the market crashing? No, it's booming. But that's what I've been doing here since 2015 with Angie and Joaquin. That's kind of my side hustle. So I've been buying apartments here and remodeling them and selling them and buying more and remodeling them and selling them. So this is the latest apartment that we've remodeled, and I'm very, very proud of it. It's awesome. So if you want to check it out, if you want to buy it, we're marketing it for $325,000. It's currently rented for $3,000. Best location, best apartment in Medellin, right in the heart of Provenza and Poblado. So I'll put a link in the description of this video when we're done with the live stream, and you can go straight to Angie and Joaquin's website and check it out. Okay, so now let's get into your questions. You recently said that the market has insider information. Obviously, retail and retirees do not. What percentage of total market cap do you think has access to privileged info? I don't know what percentage. Enough to move the market, that's for sure. So, I mean, what's market cap to GDP? It's the Buffett indicator is right off the top of my head. 130-ish percent of GDP, maybe more. So that means the market cap is, I don't know, 30 trillion, 35 trillion. I don't know. I don't know. I haven't thought about it, Joel. It's a great question. I just know that there's a high enough percentage to move the market. And I don't know. I'm speculating. It's just very odd to me that when big events come out, it seems as though the market moves in that direction the day prior at the close, like every single time. So I think it's what was in Wall Street with Gordon Gekko. Remember, Endicott likes blue steel or blue steel. Was that was that his saying or something? Was it Endicott's? What was that? Gray horse likes blue steel. I don't know. But remember when he made that call to the media, and then the media gets it out, but they already have the information and they're just kind of manipulated. I totally believe that that is what happens today. I mean, you've got this person going to lunch with that person on Wall Street, and they manage a huge hedge fund, and they're trying to get insider information, or a lot like Billions. If you guys have seen that show, I think that it to a large degree, with the SEC and the hedge funds, several of them, and the big banksters and whatnot, I think it operates just like that. If you've ever watched the show Billions. So that's why I don't think that retail investors can really have a huge edge in short-term trading, but their edge is in the long term because they don't have to answer to investors. They don't have a P&L that's short-term month by month. So they can take a position and sit and wait. And that's a big edge. That's why I like to invest myself just for the really, really long term. What is happening with the Eurodollar future curve? I'm not sure. I had a conversation with a gentleman this morning that's going to be in the Rebel Capitalist Show, and he goes by at Macro Alf on Twitter. His name is Alfonso. He's got an Italian last name that I can't really pronounce, but he's a great guy. We'll definitely be talking to him more. And he was saying that the curve is still inverted, but I haven't looked at it lately. And last time I was talking to Snyder, it was inverted out past 2024 and into 2026. But regardless, even if it inverts, if it's not inverted now, the fact that it was inverted for a few weeks, it's pretty much that's you know, when the treasury curve inverts, it doesn't have to invert for long, and it usually doesn't. And that's still the ominous sign that is highly predictive of a recession. It is Valentine's Day. It's Valentine's Day today? Oh, I didn't know that. Well, I guess I'm learning something on tonight's live stream. Well, happy Valentine's Day, guys. Take your day off and go dance some Colombian cumbia at the disco, brother. Yeah, I actually went out on Friday night, went some live music here at a place that I really enjoy called Hub Rock. They have a great cover band that does a lot of the rock and roll from the 70s and 80s, Aerosmith, AC/DC, Led Zeppelin, Jimi Hendrix, stuff like that. And then Saturday night, I went out to another place. It's a sit-down restaurant, but they have live tango music and like professional tango dancers. It's an Argentinian place, and really, really neat. That's one thing that one of the many things I really love about Medellin is you just walk up and down the street, and it's just nothing but live music and dancing and parties. And it's just, you know, I was in Arizona and Phoenix for a long time, as most of you know, and you just don't have any of that in Arizona. It just doesn't exist. To a certain degree, you've got, you know, some cowboy bars here and there that have like the live music, but nothing like you have here in Medellin. It's just the city is alive, and the energy and the people and the weather and the food. It's really great. Okay, question. Our country has a deep cancer at all levels of government. Can we remove without a civil war? I mean, it's possible. It's possible. Yeah, it is. I mean, look at what the truckers are doing. They're a great example. And I think government isn't going to change by us just electing the right person. I do not believe that's the solution to all of our problems. I think that might kick the can down the road, might get things better temporarily. But the real solution lies with us, people. And it's a decentralized approach. And again, I think the truckers are showing that. And they are practicing civil disobedience. And they are really changing the trajectory of the political narrative in Canada. Places like Alberta, I believe Saskatchewan, have lifted their mandates. I mean, that's Trudeau, I think, feels like the whole world is collapsing in around him. And as you would expect, when politicians get desperate and they get scared, they deploy desperate measures. And I think if you guys were watching the news today, Trudeau came out and implemented basically like powers that he would only have in war. And he's using those powers against his own citizens, not against North Korea. So I sent out a tweet today, and I said this to something to the effect, this is what the slippery slope looks like. It's playing out right in front of our eyes. It's playing out in real time. We see this happening in Canada. But Trudeau would have continued to do what he was doing for the World Economic Forum, or the global leader, who knows who's really pulling his strings. It's not him. Yeah, he's just a little puppet like Biden. So, I mean, he would have kept doing what he was doing if not for the truckers. And we owe them a tremendous amount of gratitude. And hopefully, I know that kind of the crossing there, I believe around Michigan or the east side, that the police have arrested or broken that up. I think there's another one that's starting in British Columbia. I believe there's another trucker movement starting in the United States. That's another good thing. I mean, this is spread worldwide. And the trucker movement here in the United States, I believe, starts March 4th, goes from LA all the way to DC. They're going to do the same thing and have the exact same impact on Biden. I mean, if you're a politician right now that's really pushing these mandates, or you've kind of attached your carriage to that horse, so to speak, you got big problems. I mean, the last thing you want is kind of a freedom rally in your neck of the woods. So I think that's why you're going to see a lot of the politicians reverse course, among other reasons. I think they realize that platform is going to be a loser in 2022. I mean, just watch the Super Bowl yesterday. I mean, I watched most of it. I was over at some friend's house. And I mean, to my knowledge, that's in LA, right? And to my knowledge, they have a mask mandate there. Maybe they don't. Maybe they lifted it already because of the truckers and what they saw in Canada. But to my knowledge, they still have a mask mandate. And I noticed that the camera people very rarely showed the crowd. I don't know if you guys noticed that as well. I only saw them show the crowd maybe two or three times. And they showed the celebrities a couple times. But I didn't see one person wear a mask. And that's in LA. So I think that the politicians see the writing on the wall. But unfortunately, the politicians that are neck deep in the BS, most of them are, like Trudeau, they are going to resort to desperate measures. We see it every time with a dictator or someone that's just a sociopath. Whenever they start to feel like they're losing power and losing control, usually it doesn't end well. And hopefully Canada will avoid that. But my whole point is, if we're going to fix things, it's going to be from the bottom up, not the top down. Watched your great interview with Katusa about the book Rise of America. What are your thoughts on his position? How can he be so positive with likely level freedom? Well, first of all, he wrote that prior to the Cerveza sickness, if my memory serves me right. Maybe. Yeah, I think he did. But I mean, his argument is really the U.S. is the cleanest dirty shirt. I mean, I think it depends on what countries you're comparing to. And I would agree. I mean, listen, the U.S. is going in the wrong direction. We all know that. Now, there's other countries that I think are going in the right direction. That doesn't mean that they're currently, as we speak, they're better than the United States from a standpoint of freedom. Look at Florida, Texas. They're the most free places on the planet Earth right now. Now, does that mean that the country as a whole is going in the right direction? No, it's going in the wrong direction. But as of right now, I think Katusa's got a great point. So what's your time horizon, right? What's your timeline? Is it the next 2 or 3 years, or is it the next 10 years? And so, I mean, I think it's definitely applicable now. Will it be applicable in 20 years? I don't know. Does it mean the United States is going the right direction? I don't think so. You know, just because one country is right here and another country is right here, as far as free market capitalism, liberty and freedom, personal freedom. This country could be going down and this country could be going up, but it doesn't mean that this country currently is better, you see? And I think that's the point that I would make. I mean, I'm doing a whiteboard video tomorrow on, you guys can see it right here in the background. I just drew out step number one. And it's based on Lynn Alden's most recent blog post, Does the National Debt Matter? And let me tell you what, it does. It absolutely does. And the predicament the United States is in right now with debt GDP at over 120%, that is the no bueno zone, big time. So I'll outline it in tomorrow's whiteboard video. You'll see what I mean. And again, the U.S. may be the cleanest dirty shirt right now, but there's problems. Hey guys, I want to remind you to get your tickets to Rebel Capitalist Live. This is the live conference I do twice per year with all of your favorite speakers from the Rebel Capitalist show and experts in investing, commodities, real estate, freedom, and liberty. All of your favorite topics, all of your favorite speakers. The next Rebel Capitalist Live is going to be in Miami, and tickets increase in price as we get closer to the event. So go to rebelcapitalistlive.com right now to get your tickets to the next Rebel Capitalist Live. It's the conference you cannot afford to miss. It'll help you increase your financial freedom and, more importantly, your personal freedom. You'll get intel that you won't hear anywhere else. Past speakers have included icons in macroeconomics, investing, and personal freedom and liberty. People like Dr. Ron Paul, Robert Kiyosaki, Brent Johnson, Lynn Alden, Jeff Snyder, Richard Werner, Mark Moss, Lynette Zhang, and Robert Breedlove, just to name a few. So once again, go to Rebel Capitalist Live right now and get your tickets today. Was that it, Joe? Endicott likes blue steel. I knew that Endicott. Yeah, I knew it was something like that. Or was it Blue Horse? No, Endicott. I think that's what it was. Groman suggested in the past a decision by the Fed to change the U.S. dollar price to gold would allow reset of the U.S. debt. I mean, on paper, yeah. But I mean, to give Krugman credit, so would $1 trillion coin, the $1 trillion platinum coin. I'm just making a $10 trillion platinum coin. Why not? All you need is just some stupid balance sheet entry for the Fed, which honestly, you really don't even need that. But I mean, yeah, I mean, you could revalue gold, but I don't know how much that would revalue the overall price. Basically, what he's saying is the Fed just buys the gold from the U.S. at a ridiculously high rate, and all that money goes into the TGA, and then the TGA can pay the bills, or the Treasury can pay the bills. But again, same thing with the platinum coin. It's same concept. So yeah, possible. Is it probable? Probably not. But, you know, Luke's a hell of a lot smarter than I am. So I would defer to Luke. And it depends on how desperate they get. Again, do I see it happening in the next year? Probably not. The next 5 years? Who knows? I remember when I was interviewing Luke back in, I've interviewed Luke two or three times, maybe three or four times. And it was one of the first times I was talking to him back in 2020. And we were joking on the interview. You can see it on the George Gammon channel about the Fed's balance sheet going to 10 trillion. We're like, oh yeah. I mean, where are we going next, Luke? Is 10 trillion? Is it going to get that? And we were like laughing at like how ridiculous that statement sounded. This was back when their balance sheet was at 4.5. And now the balance sheet's at what? 8.5. And if you guys watch my video tomorrow, you'll see that although temporarily the Fed might be able to do a little QT in reducing the size of their balance sheet, in my opinion, that ain't going to last long. And if we look out 5 years, 10 years from today, the Fed's balance sheet is going to be exponentially larger than it is today. So we're going into some crazy, crazy times, guys. And I've said this so many times, but I think it's so true. Going back to 2020, in regards to our personal freedom and liberty, I would always repeat the quote from Lenin, where he would say that decades go by where nothing happens, and then there's weeks that go by where decades happen. And I thought that we would go by weeks in 2020 and 2021, where decades would go by in terms of the attack, assault on our personal liberty and freedom. And I think I was correct about that. Now, I think that same idea, that same concept is applicable to macroeconomics and the U.S. economy in 2022. And so, where are we when we get to the other side of the tunnel? Will we be in a situation that would be desperate enough to do something like that? Possibly. I mean, we're just going to have to see how this plays out and make sure that as prudent investors, that we are hyper-focused on risk management. In the conversation that I had today with Macro Alf, Alfonso is his name, he used to manage $20 billion, a fund of $20 billion. That's a lot. That's a big fund. And we were commenting, going back and forth, about the Market Wizards books, because we've both read those and they impacted our view tremendously. And what you learn when you read the Market Wizards books, whether you're reading about Ed Thorpe or Jim Rogers or Stan Druckenmiller, is that all the OGs, all the greats, you know, you sit there and marvel at their returns. But what they focused on more than anything else was risk management. Risk management, manage your downside. And I think never has that been more true than 2022 right now. What do I think is going to happen to the European economy? Do you think it'll fight inflation? No, I don't think so, because they're in the same position as the U.S. economy, where they're over 100% debt to GDP, maybe not Germany, most countries there. And if I'm at least in the South, maybe not in the North, I haven't looked at the numbers, but they're, I don't know how that one resolves itself, honestly, because of just the massive discrepancy between the South and the North as far as their fiscal policy. But once a country gets above 100% debt to GDP, they're screwed. They're done. It's game over. Game over. Lynn points out this study going back to 1800, where they analyzed 50 different countries that got to over 100% debt to GDP, or excuse me, 51 countries. Did I say 50? It was 51 countries. And 50 out of those 51 defaulted, either through an honest default or a dishonest default via financial repression and inflation. So the U.S. is at 120 right now. You say, hey, George, well, they were at 120 at World War II. Yeah. So how'd they get out of that? Financial repression. You just cap rates and you let inflation run hot. You have negative real yields. And you basically steal from the bondholders and the savers, people who have made prudent decisions, the people who did the right thing, the people who produced more than they consumed. You steal from them. It's either that or you just tell your creditors to pound sand. And usually that only happens when the debt is denominated in a currency the government cannot print. And so the conclusion of Lynn's post, which I would suggest all of you guys read at lynnalden.com, is don't hold bonds because the United States only has one way out. That's through inflation and financial repression. Long term, see, this is where it gets tricky. Because over the short term, you look at the yield curve flattening. Yield curve flattening means high probability that of an economic contraction, economic activity going down, not up. So how do you get to financial repression, potentially even nominal GDP going down, especially if we have an inversion of the curve, we get a recession, by definition is at least real GDP going down. And so how do you inflate your way out of that? I could very easily describe a doom vortex right now for the U.S. economy, that's for sure. But that's why we go back to that Lenin quote. And I think we're going to see decades happen in this year, for sure. So it's going to be an exciting time for macro. But going back to your question here, the European economy, I think they'll try. Do you think they'll try to fight inflation? I think they'll try to maybe raise rates a little bit. You know, they don't have the stock market there that we have in the States. I think they're just going to try this, you know, the Ray Dalio beautiful deleveraging, and just pray that they can just raise rates a little bit to get inflation down, but yet still have negative real rates to try to work that debt to GDP down a little bit. I think they'll try to do the same thing. Now, whether they can stick the landing or not is a completely different question. I think that's going to be their objective. Oh, is that it? Blue Horseshoe loves Anacott Steel. Maybe I'm getting, okay, so I'm getting it in reverse. That sounds right. Do I offer business advice on a paid consulting? No, I've done that a couple times, and I appreciate the inquiry, but I don't do that anymore. Maybe in the future I'll do it again, but not right now. Looks like my buddy Rolo's on the live stream. Hey, Rolo, hope you're well. I think you're in Cape Coral, so enjoying the freedom and liberty. Oh, and by the way, Rolo, thanks for setting me up with Fresh and Fit. I did their podcast the other day when I was flying out of Miami. I had a couple extra hours, so I went over to their place and did their live stream. A lot of fun. Those guys are great. I just love their enthusiasm and their desire to learn about all aspects of life. And so thanks for, I don't know if you're the one that hooked that up, but if you did, I appreciate it. Okay, you mentioned that you frequent Colombia on an investor visa. What kind of startup entry barrier are we looking at? Six figures, seven? Oh, it's not seven figures, no way. Purchase 1, 5, 10 rentals to gain. I can't remember, Mike, I don't think it was more than 200,000. I mean, it's not how many properties you have. It's just how much money you bring into the country. And I don't think it was more than 200, max 250, but it might've been lower than that. Might've only been 150. I don't remember, but it's somewhere around there. Now that's for the specific investor visa that I have. There may be other investor visas where it's only 25,000 or 50,000. I'm not sure because I don't really get in the weeds like that because I've got like people who do that for me. So Sebastian set all that up, and really what it boils down to is I say, hey, Sebastian, see if we can get this visa or this an investor visa. And he does all the homework and says, oh yeah, we just got to do this, this, and this, and this is the best one. I'm like, great, make it happen. And then he sets it up, and then literally he's like, oh, next Tuesday, we have to go down and get your picture taken. I'm like, okay, we just went down and got my picture taken and bam, I got my investor visa. So I don't really get involved with the process at all. Okay, guys, let's see. I'm still top three most libertarian countries, Idaho, Texas, Florida. Right now, that's pretty much what you're dealing with. I can't. It goes back to Marin, probably the U.S. If I just had to say, as of right now, this moment in time, I can't think of one that's more libertarian than not that the U.S. is libertarian by any wild stretch of the imagination. But that just tells you how bad all the other countries are. The truckers, along with our help, we got a lot of work out of us. That's for sure. But what's neat is they're showing us that it can be done. Can I explain Milton Friedman's view about the depression being caused by the Fed not printing enough money? I don't want to misstate Friedman's view because I haven't studied it extensively. I've just heard him talk about it in YouTube videos and whatnot. But basically, I believe when the Fed needed or should have backstopped the banks, I mean, that was their mandate. That was their only mandate back then. They didn't. And I think that's what he was referring to. Now, I don't know that I totally agree that that's the only thing that caused the Great Depression, because I look at the Austrians' view here, and that it was the run-up with all the debt in the 1920s. I think that may have more to do with it, and the banking system just, you know, really getting out of hand, and maybe they're doing that because they thought the Fed had their back, you know, moral hazard. I don't know. I haven't done a lot of research on what happened that caused the Great Depression, but it seems to me that it would be a mix of both, kind of the Austrians' view, maybe Friedman's view as well. I mean, again, it's kind of, you know, chicken or egg type thing. I think the Austrians would say, well, yeah, Friedman's right, but if we wouldn't have had the run-up in the debt, we would not have needed the Fed to step in. So I think that would probably be their argument there. And I think that both arguments have quite a bit of merit. Do I think potential war between Russia and Ukraine will affect the stock market? Not unless the U.S. really gets involved. The reason I say that is because I think that will prompt the Fed to take a more dovish stance. And with the market expecting 7 rate hikes right now in 2022, and that being priced in, I think anything that would detract from that many rate hikes would catch the market off sides, and you'd get some big upside potential. Question is, what does that do to inflation? And would they, you know, that's a very, very precarious position for the Fed. Because let's say we do get a war, usually they would drop rates to support the economy, to support the stock market and everything. But how do they do that when inflation is at 7.5% and you got the politicians and the administration breathing down their neck, trying to get them to do something, quote unquote, about inflation so they can get reelected, which I think is kind of what's going on behind the scenes. But yeah, I don't know that it'll affect the stock market. Maybe a bit. But then it probably rebound. And then if the Fed comes out, takes a dovish stance, I think it goes higher. If the Fed doesn't take a dovish stance and continues with their hawkish tone, I think you could see maybe, you know, 10% downside. But I don't, if you go back and look at the stock market when they have gone to war, it doesn't tank at all. At least it hasn't. I remember Iraq. I remember the first Iraq, the second Iraq. You'd think it would, but it didn't, and it rebounded quickly, if my memory serves me right. So, final answer is no, I don't think it would affect it too much there, but look for the Fed taking a dovish stance, and then if the U.S. gets involved, though, that's a different story. Yeah, and also, too, I mean, I see your question again about Friedman. Even if that did cause the initial dip in the Great Depression, I don't think it's what prolonged it. I definitely agree with the Austrians that I think what prolonged it is the government trying to get involved and meddle in the real economy. So, yeah, I mean, the Fed might have been able to reduce the initial drop down in economic activity, maybe reduce the unemployment rate by supporting the banks so they wouldn't have gone bust and you wouldn't have the bank runs. But as far as what's extended the Great Depression, I think that was government. What stock trading software do you use? Listen. I go into my brokerage account so rarely that I don't even know the password. So, I mean, the brokerage thing I use, if that's the right word, is TD Ameritrade. And that's not even the best one. I mean, it's just, if you should use Interactive Brokers, in my opinion. All the pros that I know use Interactive Broker. I should, but I just haven't had time. I'm too lazy. And, but listen, you're asking the wrong guy about trading software. I don't use anything like that. I don't trade. I don't think I have an edge. Oh, I know I don't have an edge there. I just buy something and hold it. And I hold it for years and years usually. And, you know, even oil, I'm trying to kind of scale out of that position. The big oil position I took back in March 2020, you guys talked a lot about on this channel. But even that one, I haven't been able to scale out because I've been trying to, or have Josh really does it for me, just sell the calls to, you know, get paid to scale out of the position. But none of the darn strike prices have gotten hit. So I still have it. I'd like to sell it because it's expensive. I think oil is probably going to go up a lot, but it's just, that's not the game I play. I just buy things when they're cheap and sell them when they're expensive, regardless of what I think the price direction will do. I remember you saying you sold all of your real estate investments. With inflation rising and tax benefits, isn't it best to keep your money in cash flowing real estate? So you guys have to understand, this is why I can never give investment advice, because everyone's different. Everyone's objectives are different. Everyone has different levels of income, age, risk tolerance, etc. So for me, one of the main reasons I had so much real estate in the United States, because, you know, I want 80% of my portfolio to pay me to own it. And I went pretty much all in. Back in 2012, I hadn't thought of the 10-80-10 portfolio. I didn't know any of that stuff. I didn't know about gold. I didn't know about speculation. I didn't know anything. So I pretty much went all in with real estate, and because I was just trying to take advantage of stuff that I thought was cheap. Cash flow was cheap. So the main reason I was selling in the United States, and I just sold the last property last week, I think we closed March 3rd, is it was just getting expensive. So does that mean I think housing in the United States will go down? Not necessarily. I think it's in a bubble. That doesn't mean I think the price is going to go down anytime soon. It was just expensive. And that end, I like to have a diversification, not only within the portfolio, but within the cash flow that I'm receiving. Because I spend so much time out of the United States, often the majority of my expenses are denominated in currencies other than the dollar. So for me, I believe it's prudent to have cash flow that's denominated in other currencies. So what has happened in the last couple years is because of the YouTube channel, really, with Rebel Capitalist Pro, with Rebel Capitalist Live, you know, I've got a lot of dollars coming in as a result of those activities. So my dollar cash flow was way, way, way too high. And so that was another thing that prompted me to sell the rental properties that I have in the United States. Now, how many people on this live stream right now are in my position? Probably not a lot. So, does it mean that everyone should just run right out and sell their cash flowing property in the United States? Not at all. Not at all. Not at all. It really just depends on what your objectives are, who you are, what your expertise is, your age, your risk tolerance, all of these different. So, isn't it best to keep your money? Well, it depends on who you are. For some people, yeah. For other people, no. I think the main thing, Anthony, in the United States is you've got to understand that you're playing with fire. you have to understand that the real estate market is in a bubble. That doesn't mean that you shouldn't buy or you shouldn't own, but you've got to realize that the property is the liability on your balance sheet. And the debt, the 30-year fixed rate mortgage, is the asset. And this is something, this is a concept that I've talked about all the time. I mean, really, since I've started the YouTube channel back in whenever that was, 2019 or so. I think the summer of 2019. But you've got to go into it with your eyes open. You can't just go into it and say, oh my gosh, all my friends are making all this money in real estate, so I'm just going to buy anything. And I know I'm going to make out like a bandit. No, 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 no. That's when you're going to get run over. That's when you're going to get your butt handed to you. You've got to be an expert here. And unfortunately, that's just the world we live in. That's the investment world we live in. The days of just buying the long bond, setting it and forgetting it, that's over. Or just setting up, you know, a 60-40 portfolio that, and just set it, forget it, buy the dip. Those days are over. That's gone. That doesn't exist. That worked very well from 1981 to today. That will not work over the next 40 years, in my opinion. Why? Because at some point, we are going to go into an interest rate up cycle. Are we going into that now? I don't know. But at some point, we will, because interest rates are cyclical. So if you think that that what worked in an interest rate down cycle for 40 years is going to work in an interest rate up cycle for 40 years, you are sadly mistaken. That's for sure. That's for sure. So anyway, I don't want to get off on a tangent, Anthony. It's a great question. But my point is, for some people, it still makes sense for sure. But just understand that you're buying into a bubble. You own property that's in a bubble. And that doesn't necessarily mean that you shouldn't own it. But you've got to be cognizant of the risks. I think that's what I'm trying to say. And then just try to view it as the property being the liability and the debt being the asset. Hey guys, I want to remind you to check out Rebel Capitalist Pro. This is the incredible online investment forum that I have with investment experts, Lynn Alden and Chris McIntosh. It includes professionals such as Patrick Serezna from Macro Voices. He specializes in options. Tony Greer, commodity trading. Jason Hartman, real estate. And Brent Johnson with macroeconomics. If you want to build wealth and thrive in this world of out of control central banks and big governments, Rebel Capitalist Pro is the resource you need. So check it out today at georgegammon.com/pro. That's georgegammon.com/pro. We'll see you inside with the fellow Rebel Capitalists that are taking their investing to the next level.
Have I heard Simon Hunt thoughts about the dollar index going down by half after China and Russia back? No, that's not gonna happen. I don't know who Simon Hunt is. Maybe a very smart guy. Maybe that's, you know, maybe we're not capturing the whole idea. But if China and Russia back their currency with gold, I think that would be great. Does that mean that the dollar goes to 50 on the DXY? I don't think so. There's too much dollar denominated debt in the world. And that dollar-denominated debt creates future demand, regardless of what, you know, China and Russia are doing. I mean, that would kickstart it for sure. So in my opinion, what you're trying to do is you're trying to time when the dollar is going to lose its reserve currency status. That's, I think, what you're trying to figure out. In my opinion, the way you do that is you have to look at global dollar-denominated debt. And as the percentage of global debt denominated in dollars decreases, you know we're getting closer to that moment. So what would have to happen is China, Russia backs their currency with gold. And then we would have to see the percentage of global debt denominated in dollars go down and down and down and down and down. And then you know that, okay, we're getting close. We're getting close. But if the percentage of global debt denominated in dollars stays the same, I don't think you're going to see the U.S. lose its reserve currency, and I don't think you see it down at 50. Maybe you see it down at 70 again, for sure. I mean, we were down in 70 at maybe 50 is a little, maybe you could get there. Well, I guess those are two different questions. I'm probably maybe putting words into Mr. Hunt's mouth there. But yeah, so I do think the dollar could get down to 50 and the dollar still be the global reserve currency, for sure, for sure. So I think I'm accidentally conflating those two things because we were down at 70, like I said, 2011 or so. So could we get down to 50? Sure, sure, sure. But again, I don't think the dollar loses its reserve status. And it would, unless that dollar, that percentage of global debt denominated in dollars goes down significantly. And that's really the thing you got to ask yourself, right? When you're trying to figure out, you know, is the Russian ruble, or is the fact that Russia is doing business directly with China in rubles, something not denominated in dollars, or the petrodollar going away and Saudi Arabia selling their oil in euros or yen compared to dollars, you know, is that going to trigger this kind of waterfall, this doom loop for the dollar going down, 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 down? And I think people get super focused on, well, what does that do to dollar demand? But they completely exclude what's going on with dollar debt, because at the end of the day, they're kind of one and the same long term. So again, when you're trying to ask, okay, what happens to the dollar if Saudi Arabia starts denominating their oil in euros? You just have to ask yourself, well, okay, what does that do to dollar denominated debt longer term? And that would definitely reduce the dollar denominated debt for sure, because so many countries and so many corporations need that oil. So they're gonna borrow whatever they need to borrow to get the oil. So that would affect it. But as far as China backing their currency with gold, would that decrease the amount of dollar debt? I don't think so. I don't think so. So anyway, those are my thoughts. So Bob is asking, what are my thoughts on real estate in the US? I just went over that, Bob. So hopefully my previous answer answers your question. Keep talking about how we're going to crazy times. Talk about how it's blessing to depending on the perspective or lens you choose to view from life from. So I'm not following that. Let's see. Keep talking about how we're talk about how it's a blessing to maybe depend on the perspective or lens you choose to view life from. Yeah, I'm not sure about that question, David. Sorry, buddy. Can I think of an economy that has survived this kind of reckless QE? Well, you got to ask yourself why they're doing QE, Garo. And I think it goes back to Lynn's post on debt and does the national debt matter? And so it starts with the national debt. That's why they have to do QE. And so have they survived? Once an economy starts doing QE, they don't stop until the whole house of cards comes crashing down. Now, sometimes they can do that and stick the landing like they did in the 1940s, but someone pays the price. And the 1940s, the bondholders. And which tells you just how disgusting the government is. And think about that. You know, the government went out and encouraged Americans to lend them money so they could go to war. And Americans did that. They thought it was their patriotic duty. And that's how it was sold. And then what did the government do to return the favor, to pay back all of those people who gave their life savings to help us win World War II? What did the government do to thank them? They intentionally devalued the dollars to pay them back. They intentionally stole their money. Think about, let that sink in for a moment. I mean, it's deplorable, truly. Not the way Hillary Clinton uses the word or whatever. But it's so immoral. It's so unethical. It's just, oh man, it's such a scam, really. It is. And they're doing the exact same thing today. Exact same thing today with financial repression. Now, they haven't done the whole marketing thing to get people to buy the bonds. But the net result will still be the same. There is no free lunch, and someone's got to pay. And it's never the government. It's always the people. So the fact that the government has taken their debt to 120% debt to GDP, usually the people who do the right thing and behave prudently, who produce more than they consume, they're the ones that pay the tab. And I think that's what we'll definitely see in the future, because that's what we have seen in the past. But QE is just a symptom. It's not the actual sickness. The sickness is the debt to GDP. All right, guys, we'll go ahead and leave it at that. Do some shout outs. I don't know where this, I was going to put, maybe I can find it on my Twitter feed. I put the post on my Twitter feed for the property here in Medellin. It's a gorgeous property. You know what was cool is I went over there the other day, and it was the first time I had seen it since it was done. So that was a lot of fun. Joaquin and Angie just knocked the ball out of the park. So again, $325,000 is the ask price. All the property laws or private property rights, you know, same thing that you have in the States. Super easy for foreigners to buy. But anyway, you can check out the pictures. And if any of you are interested, we've had about 10 or 15 people already express interest. But if you guys are interested, you can email or WhatsApp Joaquin or Angie. There we go. So I just put a link to the property in the description. And it's, right now it's rented out for $3,000 a month. With expenses and everything, usually that nets out to about $2,000, $2,100, something like that, as far as positive cash flow. All right, guys, let me do some shout outs here. Who do we have on the live stream? Oh, All Nighter Hider in the house. We've got Mexi Mike, Peter, Ron, Peter. Oh, I wanted to try to pronounce that and it skipped. Peter Ron Kvist. I'm sure I'm butchering it. Sorry, Peter. Tim Jensen Holmes, Moody the Millennial in the house. Mitchell, Mr. B, RR, Rick Quinn, Mike Horseman, By Warwickum Stacker, New Zealand, Ian Niculescu, Abel Pardo, Free Patriot, yes, Sion Toki, Infinity G37, cool car. I actually had a G35 right when they came out. That was back in like, oh man, maybe 2004, 5. I remember I bought a black one. Fun car. Really, it was a great car. Okay, who else do we have here? C. Caceres, Alexanders, Brody, Jorge Guzman, Frogadelic Research Group. All right, guys. Enjoy the rest of your evening. Always stand up for freedom, liberty, free market capitalism. We'll see you in the next video.
Thank you for listening to the Rebel Capitalist Show. For more content like this, check out the Rebel Capitalist blog at georgegammon.com or go to the George Gammon YouTube channel.